Good afternoon and welcome to The Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It is Wednesday, the 2nd of April, 2025. This is program number 1348 of The Lunchroom, and I'm your host, Calix George Jr. In addition to radio, 101.1 FM, you can also get us at our website, rcistlucia.com, and we are also streaming live on Facebook. And you just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. Please be sure to like and share that as well with your friends and family. The number to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, it is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And also our WhatsApp number, 724-0008. In a little while, we'll be discussing, well, sending out some condolences on the passing of a significant member of the medical fraternity. We're also going to be discussing the budget and taxes and how should that contribute to payment of financing of the budget. We also want to touch on the whole matter of what Ponzi schemes are in the wake of what appears to be quite a lot of public interest in a particular program. And as well, we're going to touch on the Trump tariffs and the balance of trade issues facing the United States of America and the world. But first, our history for today. In the year 1513, explorer Juan Ponce de Leon claimed Florida for Spain as the first known European to reach it. In the year 1792, the Coinage Act was passed in the United States, and that established the United States Mint and authorized the $10 eagle, the $5 half eagle, the 250 quarter eagle coins, and the silver dollar, half dollar, quarter dime, and half dime. And as well, in 1801, on this day, the Battle of Copenhagen saw British naval forces led by Horatio Nelson, destroying the Danish fleet during the Napoleonic Wars. Perhaps President Trump is going to be looking to that for Greenland. In 1917, the U.S. President Woodrow Wilson asked Congress to declare war against Germany. Of course, that was in the wake of the Great War, World War I. 1930, on this day, Rastafari Makonnen was proclaimed Emperor Haile Selassie of Abyssinia, or Ethiopia. 1982, on this day, several thousand Argentine troops invaded and seized the Falkland Islands from the United Kingdom on this day. And in 2020, on this day, April 2nd, a record 6.6 million Americans filed claims for unemployment in the prior week, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. And of course, that was in the throes of the COVID-19 pandemic. We now move on to our dish of the day. The daily dish is brought to you the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus. Did all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also glad gas, and vanity. Box, doors, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best tiles on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, Hugo Zillings, and Slack Street in Dufort. Telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to our program for today. And first we want to, before we get into anything else, send out some condolences. First we want to send out that to the family of the late Mr. Greg Glass. And he was certainly one of St. Lucia's well-known entrepreneurs and made a considerable contribution in terms of the development of the commercial as well as touristic landscape here in St. Lucia. And unfortunately, the news of his passing came just yesterday. He founded back in the 1970s what was then known as Glass Supermarket and Wholesale. And a little later on in 1981, he was one of the early pioneers, St. Lucian pioneers, in the hospitality sector. And you'd recall perhaps prior to maybe as far back as the 1940s or thereabouts, we saw the formation of what was the St. Lucia Tourist Board and plans to expand tourism, you know, the hotel plant north of Castries into what was seen as really lovely undeveloped areas into Groseley, North Castries and Groseley. And prior to that, you would recall properties, hotel properties were largely in and around Castries, you know, the likes of Chesterfield, owned by the St. Helen family. There was also the, I think, the Blue Waters Hotel, which they also started off at VG, and later on the VG Beach Hotel, or Red Lion, I think it was at one point. Then there was, of course, also Villa Hotel, and even before that, one of the very, very early ones, the San Antoine, and some other small properties in and around Castries, guest houses. It was only until the 1960s when we saw large-scale resort-type hotels starting off, and the first one, I think, was opened back in 1961. And that was a sort of a partnership and investment through what was the Colonial Development Corporation, the CDC, coming in and investing in a hotel plant, which is was the St. Lucian Hotel, I think now known as, well, was once at one point the Papillon and Starfish, and even, of course, served as a quarantine facility during COVID-19. And so it was during that period of time, later on with the creation of the Rodney Bay Marina, you saw a thrust towards this resort style tourism, and the and of course a lot of it still was the pull was to get in investment from the outside. And here you had a St. Lucian entrepreneur in the person of Mr. Greg Glass, in fact, taking that plunge and investing in what was then known as the Islander Hotel, which in fact remained for quite a number of years in operation. Eventually, of course, the property was sold and is now the Baywalk Mall. But certainly we want to extend condolences to his family and friends on his passing. We also want to extend condolences to the family of the late Dr. Gemma Cherry. And Gemma, the news of Gemma's passing certainly came as a shock to many who were not aware of her illness. In fact, a very young individual, Gemma, certainly played a role in terms of being an advocate for healthcare in St. Lucia. And so certainly it was quite unfortunate that we now have to be speaking of her passing. The St. Lucia Medical and Dental Association sent out a release yesterday noting just this. And I'll just try to read this out very quickly. It is with profound sadness that we, the executive and members of the St. Lucia Medical and Dental Association, report the passing of our colleague and friend, Dr. Gemma Cherry, 8 days shy of what would have been her 48th birthday. Dr. Cherry was passionate about healthcare, particularly public health. She completed an associate's degree in nursing in 1998, then went on to complete a medical degree, graduating from the University of Medical Sciences Las Tunas in Cuba in July of 2007. Dr. Cherry earned a master's degree in public health from the University of West Indies, Cavill, and a second master's degree in biostatistics from Clarkson University. She served in multiple public health capacities, including Deputy Epidemiologist in the Ministry of Health, St. Lucia, Pan American Health Organization, PAHO, representative in Guyana, Antigua, and Suriname. Gemma, or Kay, as her friends affectionately called her, was loyal to a fault. She was certainly never one to mince words. Her strength, resilience, and grace in the face of insurmountable odds truly define her character. Dr. Cherry leaves behind her beloved family, colleagues, friends, and cherished puppies, Jai and Riri. May her family find solace during this difficult time, and may she rest in eternal peace. That coming from the St. Lucia Medical and Dental Association. And it's quite telling, though, sometimes, because, as I mentioned, of course, Gemma is pretty young. And in fact, I first met Gemma way back in through the students branch of the National Youth Council. That was during secondary school times. And I think at the time, Gemma, in fact, had been the president of the students branch, and of course speaks to the nature of her advocacy for a very, very long time. At that time, I believe she was a nursing student up at the Sir Arthur Lewis Community College, and always very passionate, always willing to serve and to certainly chart a course and to represent the interests of the public good. And so certainly her loss is a significant one. It's very unfortunate where you see individuals going oh so early, and you then wonder about the gulf that has been created, the gap, you know, in terms of the work that they in fact are doing. Because, of course, they're in the prime of their lives and they were making significant contributions. And then, of course, to be speaking of a loss and funerals and their passing at such an inopportune time. I also think, of course, not too long ago, we lost Mr. Leonard Robinson. And Leonard, of course, was up at KAMDU, and he was so very instrumental in his field of linguistics. And his absence now has certainly left a major gap in terms of the programming of initiatives that the Ministry of Education would have been trying to drive forward. I mean, for example, just recently they launched the efforts at piloting the teaching of Kweor language in schools. And so certainly when these gaps come up and individuals are lost at that age, sometimes it's pretty hard to recover. It gives us an important message of the importance of the primacy of the human resource in driving forward anything that we want to be able to actually achieve. Now, as well, you may or may not be hearing much of, depending on what circles you are in, what appears to be a run on a particular company or program or scheme or however you want to characterize it, which seemingly was operating here in St. Lucia. And you wonder sometimes, because many of us would not be familiar with the name of this entity, but appears now to be causing quite a lot of havoc amongst many, many individuals in St. Lucia, but not only in St. Lucia, but across the Caribbean as well. And unfortunately, this certainly is causing quite a lot of concern, because an entity which purported to be an investment program, from our understanding, comes around, and we've seen many of these, and usually they may be coming in purporting to sell some kind of product or to be engaging in some kind of sale of different products, and they come and go all throughout the time. And so we know that these things have been around for some time, but unfortunately, we still see that sometimes these entities can still convince a fair number of individuals with respect to actually parting with their money and making investments. And of course, the way this works usually in terms of Ponzi schemes is that the individual has to be motivated to then go out to sell the program to other individuals. And remember, a Ponzi scheme is largely a pyramid scheme, right? Or a multi-level scheme. It's generally tiered, and the idea is that the more people you get to join, the more money you make. But then the big question always is, what happens at the bottom of the pyramid? Because these things do have limitations. And of course, invariably, what you tend to have is that the people on the top are the ones reaping the greatest benefits. So the persons who join earliest are the ones who are the beneficiaries. And so, of course, you will end up joining, and depending at what point you join, you may find yourself being a very unhappy camper. We have a little clip which gives just a very, very short explanation as to what a Ponzi scheme is, and just so we can remind the listening public, we're going to share it at this time.
Scam which revolves, as the name suggests, a pyramid scheme is an investment scam which revolves around current investors receiving money by recruiting new members. The new members will receive money by recruiting other people, and so on. Let's assume Peter starts a pyramid scheme where the cost of being a member is $100 per month. He promises to pay people $90 monthly for each person they get to join and keeps $10. Paul and George pay Peter directly and join. Therefore, Peter now makes $200 per month. Paul then invites Rachel and Sarah, whereas George invites Bill and Jim. Peter now makes $240 per month, whereas Paul and George make $180 monthly, but are left with $80 after paying their $100 fee. The four newest members, however, aren't making any money and have to pay $100 monthly. If they don't manage to get new people to join, they'll quit. This means Paul and George won't make money anymore, so they'll quit too if they don't get new members, making the pyramid scheme collapse. A Ponzi scheme, on the other hand, also relies on new money coming in to pay existing investors, but with one exception. The investors don't know this. They're being lied to and think it's a legitimate investment. This is what Bernie Madoff got away with for decades. He convinced people he generated returns by trading, when in fact, he was simply using money from new members to pay existing ones. Some people think our entire financial system is a Ponzi scheme because it needs perpetual growth, but that is a topic for another video.
Right, and that there, of course, gives you a bit of a breakdown on the whole concept of Ponzi schemes and pyramid schemes. And so certainly, it's something to be wary of, especially given this current era where it appears people are trying to sell everything. And before, you one would have expected at least there was some kind of physical product, but now it's... It's very, very diversified in terms of what people are apparently trying to sell. But either way, the Senusha Daily Post is carrying a story, panic among Creative Alliance members over possible investment losses. A wave of panic has gripped members of Creative Alliance, CA, a popular investment scheme in Senusha, following alarming developments that could signal the loss of hundreds of thousands of dollars in member contributions. Early this morning, CA members awoke to disturbing news that key merchants, whose videos are central to the platform's watch and share investment model, had abruptly exited WhatsApp groups associated with the scheme. In some cases, members themselves were inexplicably removed from these groups, intensifying fears that the operation may be collapsing. Creative Alliance offers members the opportunity to invest in packages of varying amounts in exchange for watching or sharing promotional videos. Monthly payouts are promised, calculated based on the package purchased. The sudden disruption, however, has left many questioning whether their investments will ever be recovered. Efforts by concerned members to get answers have been met with silence or vague responses from CA managers. Quote, no one is telling us anything concrete, one frustrated investor told the Daily Post. We're just being told to stay calm, but the signs aren't good. Adding fuel to the fire is the circulation of a disturbing screenshot on social media, allegedly a conversation between CA representatives and an overseas head office. The exchange includes racial slurs and has sparked outrage online. Another widely shared message, purportedly from a local CA manager, attempts to reassure members, urging them to stay positive despite the chaos. As fears grow, authorities have yet to issue a public statement. Members are now demanding transparency and answers as they brace for what could be a major financial fallout. And that piece coming from the St. Lucia Daily Post, posted today. So certainly, it is a matter of concern, and we should be certainly thinking of as to how to invest safely and responsibly. Of course, investment is, and you've heard, no risk, no return. But at the same time, of course, you have to be looking at safeguards. You certainly have to be thinking about the potential red flags, right? And whether, in fact, these are approved investment agencies. And even the concept of what is being meant by an investment needs to be properly understood. And so, especially when these schemes are driven by you having to go out and pull in new members for you to then be able to reap greater profits, that's definitely going to be a red flag right there. And yes, there are going to be people who are going to be getting payment, and they're going to tell you, look, you know, I got $100, I got $1,000, I got whatever the case may be. But the issue, though, is that as this continues to grow, you're going to find that at some point, the base of that pyramid is not going to be able to hold. The growth may begin to slow, and you end up in a situation where there are fewer people coming in than above. The pyramid is no longer a pyramid, might very well be becoming more of a diamond, and it cannot hold the weight above it. And of course, that's when it collapses. And so we certainly have to be very, very, very wary of the many different get-rich-quick schemes that are out there, because let's face it, everybody... many people know that people are quite often looking for a means to invest. They're looking for a means to get a very high rate of return. And unfortunately, yes, sometimes some people are successful in getting those high rates of return. They invest early and they get out early, and that's good for them. But unfortunately, a lot of other people end up finding holes in their pockets. So that's our dish of the day. When we come back, we'll take in our weather report and then some calls.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A+. Need all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got glassware and vanity. Box.
thoughts, you'll see. Come down to my nobody, we got the best as an island. Trust me. We are located Land Street Industries, Bossage Groceries, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939. That's
Island style. We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. We'll have to make the right choice.
Spaces and ground. Everything you need is on the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, quality, price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Cass Street, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
Also, 1.1 is now time for your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Telemba. The forecast valid for St. Lucia for the next 24 hours. Winds will be blowing from between the east and east-northeast near 26 miles per hour or 43 kilometers per hour. The location on gust. The weather fair to partly cloudy and windy for few brief light showers. And there is an advisory in here which reads, small craft operators and sea beavers are strongly advised to exercise caution due to brisk winds and locally rough seas. The forecast for the Les Antilles, fair to partly cloudy and windy with brief isolated showers. And the weather summary, the Atlantic high pressure system will continue to generate moderate to brisk easterly winds and locally rough seas across the eastern Caribbean region over the next few days. Patches of low-level clouds moving along the wind flow will cause brief isolated showers over parts of the Les Antilles during the forecast period. And this was your weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talamba.
This has been RCI's Weather News. For more information, call the Weather Hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Style. We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say, yeah.
Spaces and ground. Everything you need is on the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. Quality, price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Cass Street, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. Of course, the number to call and tell us what's on your plate today, it is 4523046. And we also have the option of messaging in via our WhatsApp. That is 724-0008. And of course, let me just quickly share again some more information regarding Ponzi schemes. A Ponzi scheme is a form of fraud that lures investors and pays profits to earlier investors with funds from more recent investors. Named after Italian businessman Charles Ponzi, this type of scheme misleads investors by either falsely suggesting that profits are derived from legitimate business activities, whereas the business activities are non-existent, or by exaggerating the extent of profitability of the legitimate business activities, leveraging new investments to fabricate or supplement these profits. A Ponzi scheme can maintain the illusion of a sustainable business as long as investors continue to contribute new funds, and as long as most of the investors do not demand full repayment or lose faith in the non-existent assets that they are purported to own. Some of the first recorded incidents to meet the modern definition of the Ponzi scheme were carried out from 1869 to 1872 by Adele Spitzeder in Germany and by Sarah Howe in the United States in the 1880s through the quote-unquote ladies' deposit. However, Howe offered a solely female clientele an 8% monthly interest rate and then stole the money that the women had invested. She was eventually discovered and served 3 years in prison. The Ponzi scheme was also previously described in novels. Charles Dickens' 1844 novel, Martin Schutzelwit, and his 1857 novel, Little Dorrit, both featured such a scheme. In the 1920s, I suppose that's why literature and reading is important, right? In the 1920s, Charles Ponzi carried out this scheme and became well known through the United States because of the huge amount of money he took in. His original scheme was purportedly based on the legitimate arbitrage of international reply coupons for postage stamps, but he soon began diverting new investors' money to make payments to earlier investors and to himself. Unlike earlier similar schemes, Ponzi's gained considerable press coverage both within the United States and internationally, both while it was being perpetrated and after it collapsed. This notoriety eventually led to the type of scheme being named after him. The characteristics of a Ponzi scheme. In a Ponzi scheme, a con artist offers investments that promise very high returns with little or no risk to an investor. The returns are said to originate from a business or a secret idea run by the con artist. In reality, the business does not exist, or the idea does not work in the way it is described, or the extent of returns is made up or exaggerated. The con artist pays the high returns promised to the earlier investors by using the money obtained from later investors. Instead of engaging in a legitimate business activity, the con artist attempts to attract new investors to make the payments that were promised to earlier investors. The operator of the scheme also diverts clients' funds for the operator's personal use. With little or no legitimate earnings, Ponzi schemes require a constant flow of new money to survive. When it becomes hard to recruit new investors, or when large numbers of existing investors cash out, these schemes collapse. As a result, most investors end up losing much or all of the money they invested. In some cases, the operator of the scheme may simply disappear with the money. Red flags. According to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, or the SEC, many Ponzi schemes share characteristics that should be quote-unquote red flags for investors. 1. High investment returns with little or no risk. Every investment carries some degree of risk, and investments yielding higher returns typically involve more risk. Any quote-unquote guaranteed investment opportunity should be considered suspect. 2. Overly consistent returns. Investment values tend to go up and down over time, especially those offering potentially high returns. An investment that continues to generate regular positive returns, regardless of overall market conditions, is considered suspicious. 3. Unregistered investments. Ponzi schemes typically involve investments that have not been registered with financial regulators, like the SEC or the Financial Conduct Authority. Registration is important because it provides investors with access to key information about the company's management, products, services, and finances. for unlicensed sellers. In the United States, federal and state securities laws require that investment professionals and their firms be licensed or registered. Most Ponzi schemes involve unlicensed individuals or unregistered firms. 5. Secretive or complex strategies. Investments that cannot be understood or which no complete information can be found or obtained are considered suspicious. And that, of course, we'll put a pause too because we're getting in a call, so which we'll take at this time. Good afternoon, caller. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
And what's on your plate today?
The Millennium Highway and the West Coast Road wasn't under that, the European Union project?
No, it was. It's being funded principally through the United Kingdom, through a Caribbean investment fund, which they had put in place a good number of years ago, actually, under the time of Prime Minister David Cameron. And it's being managed through the Caribbean Development Bank.
Okay.
So it's a UK-funded project.
Okay, so both the Millennium Highway and the West Coast?
Yes, it's one project.
Okay, so you're actually telling me that the Millennium Highway and the West Coast is one project?
It is, it was one project being managed by the Caribbean Development Bank with funding from the UK Caribbean Infrastructure Facility or Fund, which is funding that project.
So it was
done under, when it was, in terms of implementation, they were two separate contracts, right?
Okay.
So two separate tenders. So there was a tender for the Millennium Highway section, and there's another one for the West Coast Road section.
And this thing was signed what year?
I do not remember offhand. It might have been somewhere around... When you say signed, I mean, you're talking about the actual contracts?
The contracts. I mean, when did David Cameron, because I remember that... Wasn't it about 10,000?
It must have been the original fund which allowed for it to happen, that was way back. So that was during the period of the Kenny Anthony administration. So it must have been about 2014, 15, I think. Then, of course, it took time for the actual agreement as to, well, what projects are going to be done through this fund. And then by the time the projects actually, well, originally... The Kenny Anthony administration had wanted to put that fund towards those monies towards a bypass of Castries, right?
Yeah.
And the discussion on the Northeast Coast link. When there was a change in administration, the Alan Shastley administration decided to put the funds towards the Millennium Highway and West Coast Road rehabilitation. And so I think the contracts for those, at least in the case of the Millennium Highway, it was still during the period of the Alan Chastney administration. So remember, these things sometimes take a while. There's the whole bidding process. And the tenders have to go out, the person's bid, they have to be reviewed. There has to be no objections from the CDB and others. And then... For sure, though, that the Millennium Highway one started during the period of the Alan Shastney administration, I think maybe about 2020 or thereabouts.
It was supposed to have started a long time, but nothing really started. It was started in November 2019, but it was just, and then works did not start.
But works did not start, right. There was a pause. That's correct. There was a very long time that there was no...
It was a long time. I remember Shannon was the one making all the first thing that works would have started from January.
You're very correct about that.
When you had Mr. Stevenson King saying that it was just that they went on site and all sorts of things. And nothing ever started until, I think, late. Because I also said that I heard Mr. Dominic say he was taking... what they call it, that for the West Coast Road and all of these things, the bridge and all of these things. And because I don't know how you usually just would like to take, you know, what are you calling that thing when something is done, they want to take all the praises and things for themselves. And I also need to ask another question. Why all that court cases, this injunction for a CIT court case to stop the sovereign turn and all sorts of things? And then and there's this ad on every radio station from CIT, both in English and in Patwa, as we're explaining to people the purpose of CIP and what the funds are made for. And this is done on almost every station in English and Patwa. But what I think they should also have, they should have somebody that should be explaining the CIP, like a communications officer,
mm-hmm.
giving like a report on what's going on, where it's at, and all sorts of things. But mm-hmm. what they do, they have the English and Patwa giving you all what it does for the country.
Mm-hmm.
It goes into education, it goes into agriculture, our roads, and all sorts of things. And this is explained. But with all the things, almost every time there is this on a Sunday, there's this thing. There's always this bad thing they put about the CIP, giving people the impression that it's not good and it's the problems after that. Senator will be on the this list and on that list, and it's a whole lot. So I think it's time they have some communication. That can debunk almost everything that is being said.
Well, I mean, the big question is you can't have your cake and eat it too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the opposition certainly embraced the CIP when they were in government, right? They, in fact, changed a lot of the provisions of the CIP to, things like, for example, the whole issue of the escrow accounts being registered within the OECS, ECCB, that got changed. The limits to the numbers got changed. The values of the shares got changed. So, I mean, they were very actively engaging with management of the CIP, and it's so the big question that one has to ask: are they going to do away with the CIP?
Do away because it's important to them. But guess you're saying because it's to me. I also remember it was that it started at $500,000, but they actually brought it down to $100,000, which is whoever.
I think it started at $300,000. Yeah, that.
To me, he started at $500,000. I remember Kenny and Teddy wanting to start at $500,000 to make it. I can remember that, and then I think he must have brought it down. See, because it was said, all that was said, and then they rushed it down to $100,000.
Mm.
But I'm also hearing in the news, and then the reporters sometimes need to really do their investigation because they're saying that they sold 800. Passports over a period of five years, but then this party sold 60,000.
60,000 is that what they're saying now? Okay, all right.
60,000 in 1 year. They didn't say in the 4 years. So in 1 year, they said that we sold 60,000 things. And I mean, the reporters are just repeating those things without doing no kind of investigative journalism or anything like that. And I think. And because on a Sunday, you hear this, it was on a Sunday and on a Thursday when they on their program, they meet the opposition. Anything come out of those people, more things that can easily be debunked. And those people just say anything. I mean, why do you're trying to bring down your own country just in order to get into power? I mean, look. Right now.
Well, if we were able to sell as a country 60,000 passports, even at just $100,000 US, right? We would have somewhere 16.2 billion US dollars in somewhere, right? In government, in the National Economic Fund, or in escrows, or I mean, that would be a tremendous amount of investment raised.
Also, last night that guy. That the $2 billion budget estimate is impressive, but also deceiving and all. You know, like where are you going to? You know,
I did want to play something on that one. Actually, we had that clip lined up, caller on Mr. Joseph, and it's maybe tomorrow we'll get to
and
it.
You swear he's an econ.
But one of the things I thought was a little bit strange that Mr. Joseph was saying was that he was like. But would you believe that three quarters of the money that is going, of that $2 billion is coming from taxes? And I was like, well, of course it's coming from taxes. Where else do you expect it to be coming from? I mean, that is the governments largely get their revenue from taxes. I mean, unless if you, well, I mean, this is...
Why do you think Trump is putting all this stuff
What has helped other countries, like St. Kitts, I mean, they've been able to get some monies coming out of non-tax revenue, i.e. the CIP, largely, right? Yeah. But invariably, that's where governments get money from taxation. And it's not a bad thing to say that the government is actually collecting more taxation, because if it is that the tax rates have not changed, right?
No.
Then what that effectively means is that you have more economic activity that is driving up the collection of taxes.
Yeah.
You could also have, of course, as well, and I mean, I think the Prime Minister mentioned that in his rebuttal last week, Friday. You have some aspect of it which is driven by inflation, right? The prices go up. So as a result of the prices going up, you're taxing proportionately. So therefore, the amount of tax goes up in that way. But you can then begin to figure out, well, what proportion of your increase is coming from inflation versus what proportion is coming from actual growth in the economy. And that's what you want to happen. I mean, governments want their economy to be able to grow, so therefore your tax base increases. That's a basic economic principle.
And you're making this tax look like it's something so, so bad, so detrimental. And to me, at the end of the day, what country doesn't need tax? All countries, in order for the country to grow, but you're really selling that and they're selling the CIP as if it's something that is, look right now, even Trump, the golden card for $5 million
right.
US because he wants money in his country. So who would expect Trump to be wanting investors?
Yeah.
America
asking
for investors of $5 million to get a golden card. I'm sure he couldn't care where it comes from. It could be Russia, do anywhere he would take it because his money he wants to put into his country. Yeah, but you know the way they're talking about how St. Lucia will be on this list and on that list, and St. Lucia is blacklisted. And it's a whole lot every Sunday. They just want your hand coming from this. And most of the time, these things can be easily debunked because you go out there, you get information, but yet it still goes on and on and on and on. You know, even people sometimes wonder. But yet, I don't think governments have enough communication officers out there actually immediately calling when there is something like that. So calling and, you know, explain to people. Just look at the simple thing like the yellow list, whatever it was. The following day on Newspin, it was like everything was like loose. Arrangement was made for, what is it, Martinez to call. You know, and all of these things. And the following day, it was more embarrassing for them when it turned out, when they had this recording saying there was no lease. It came out looking so silly because you come so much first. People from the United States are calling and saying whole lots of things. This Martinez was that his CEO. He knew this was coming, all sorts of things. And yet, the following day, you heard nothing. Because by that time, you know.
Well, more than that, too, caller. I think we know that the threats out there, right? We know that the environment that you're dealing with is a very difficult one. I mean, we're seeing the gap between Europe and the United States, between the United States and Canada. We're seeing how the U.S. has its agenda right now to push a lot of new reforms in immigration, in, as you said, even in terms of its own investment portfolio, and you know, so we know it's a very, very busy time, and there could very well be changes. We don't know precisely what it is we're seeing. I mean, a lot of different actions being put forward by the United States. One day it's one thing, another day it's something else. So it's a very volatile. It's a very volatile situation. So, but to try to ascribe the volatility to some sort of local action is, I think, unfair, right? Because we're all facing these risks right now, right? These potential risks. You know, I mean, whether it's coming from the European Union, if they, because, you know, the issue of immigration is a very, very heated one. And so the big question that we should be asking is how can we manage these programs, right? These CIP programs, which clearly are very important for the revenue and the sustainability of these economies right now. You know, how can we use them, make best use of the funds, and at the same time ensure the longevity of the programs into the future, right? That's what we should be talking about. Now, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to tell you, even the sovereign fund, because so many countries are... Listen, when you have the sovereign fund, that's some kind of safety net for if anything go wrong with at least the trend of the future.
Right.
Because that's what it's there for. So why now you want to stop it? Why you have a problem with it? When today or tomorrow you may, if by chance you happen to be the prime minister again, something happens to go under that sovereign fund, you may be benefiting from it. So why try to stop all things, you know, that is benefiting the country right now? Only because you are not in power. And if you are not in power, nothing good should come to the country. All things should be destroyed.
Yeah. So I think that we have to be, yes, critical, yes, but then let's ensure that what we are criticizing is the correct thing. You know, it makes no sense to be going out and trying to just criticize, let's say, CIP, right, on a whole, right, and you know, perhaps even engaging in efforts at trying to destroy CIP or make it seem to be something. I mean, all systems may have their faults, and let's try to see how those these can be reduced, how the system can be improved. I think that's really what I think would be useful at this point in time if we want to be discussing the CIP. You know, what should be in place that, you know, could assist the countries, not just even Saint Lucia, but in the entire region. And in fact, we've heard from the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank as well. They're taking a holistic audit of the various CBI programs. They're looking at the putting in a regulator in place, you know, to manage it and have oversight. And let's hope that some of those efforts will find favor with the likes of the Europeans and the Americans as well.
But I need to ask one thing. Ambition just said they stole like 800 over the 5 years. Have anybody asked this 800? Can they show St. Lucia what it is those 800 passport deserts and deserts? What did we receive out of those 800 investors they sold passports to? Can they should point out what was done with that? How much money was gained? What?
Right.
I never heard any of those questions.
Well, I mean, again, with all of these things, I think that it's the importance of accountability with the reporting. And I think maybe that's one of the things that definitely there is a need for a greater involvement of the CIP to explain, right, their accounts, right? How much is brought in? Because you see, CIP is, we speak of it in one sort of big basket, but it's not. It's the funds are going into different areas, right? So when you're investing in a real estate option, that's going in. Those funds are not going largely directly to the government. They're principally going to an escrow account, right?
Uh-huh.
Those funds are actually funds to be spent by a private entity. Eh? Let's not forget that, right? In terms of an investment. Now, that's where, again, there has to be oversight, right?
Yeah.
To ensure, and that's where you're supposed to have your escrow account. And the government is supposed to be monitoring how much money is coming out of that escrow account, signing off on it, and ensuring that it is going for the purpose to which it was raised, right?
Yeah.
So that's a very important aspect that needs to happen within the CIP.
Where did all the money go? Because, for example, first of all, the Hall of Justice that was supposed to have been built. There was no money for it, because I can remember the Prime Minister saying he's trying to get $99 million from NIC. And then so many other different things that were supposed to come on stream, but where was the funds for it? So if you had CIP and you had money coming to escrow account and all of those things, why so many things were left undone? How we were not really seeing, look, even the how you call that project on the DSH thing, it wasn't under the CIP.
Part of it was supposed to be CIP, yes.
What came of that?
The hotel was supposed to have been CIP, Alpina Hotel. I don't think that was ever utilized. It doesn't appear. The entire DSH portfolio is definitely a pretty gray area, because remember we were promised quite a lot, 400 racehorses racing every day.
Yeah, but no,
and that hasn't really ever materialized, nothing close. Yeah. So, I mean, that one is, again, another very big question mark regarding how what has happened there with respect to DSH. But I think your point's made, though, caller. Let's hope we can get some clarity, but also some responsible criticism instead of just, you know, the pure propaganda and the willy-nilly stuff. Okay, thanks very much, caller.
Okay.
Bye-bye. We are, in fact, already over time here at the lunchroom, so we'll be back again tomorrow. We do want to touch in, as I mentioned, on some comments regarding the budget. I think there was a press conference by the opposition United Workers Party. So we want to take in some of those comments and whatever else is in the news, no doubt. But that's all the time we have. I'm your host, Calix George Jr., wishing you a wonderful day.